bullied in school. We hear about a lot these days about students being bullied in school. But to have the experience of being a Muslim and being bullied in school for geopolitical reasons is something else. It was very difficult, especially for that generation, the kids that grew up with Jude, to be able to deal with. And not be protected in the educational institutions across America, that's a crime in itself.
Khalila Sabra, I want to thank you very much for being with us. New Jude Keenan Muhammad, one of the four Americans the U.S. government has admitted killing in drone strikes. Alaki and his son were also named, as well as Samir Khan, who was in Charlotte, North Carolina. That does it for our show. If you want to see our discussion with Noam Chomsky and Jeremy Scahill around dirty wars, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is May 24th, 2013. If you're listening to our podcast, well, this is all we know as of this date. Some headlines. I always am leery to do headlines. By the way, my name is Jay Koronek. I'm station advisor here at WHFR-FM. And I'm joined in the studio by our WHFR news director, Dennis Reimars, as my co-host. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Jay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. It's just have to say hello to see if his microphone's working.
That's the only reason why.
Yeah, because he might just blurt out something all of a sudden that really is important, and we don't want to miss those.
Yeah, just so everybody knows, Jay and I said hello probably an hour ago.
Yeah.
So this is on the air.
But this is official now.
Yeah.
Okay. And but we hope to talk about the Dearborn's, the various plans for Dearborn's Memorial Day Parade coming up this hour, and also the fact that not the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce, but the American Arab Chamber of Commerce has canceled the 2013 Arab International Festival that just got in the paper. It was announced last Friday, actually, and in fact, it made all the news and all the media in Detroit after 18 years. But we will talk briefly about that and just inform you on that. Money woes are continuing here at HFCC, let's see. Well, very important. There are some other topics I hope we can squeeze in. With us today for a special interview, live in the studio, which is the best way to do it, right, Dennis?
Live, yes.
Yes, being alive, is Millie Judd, who is the manager of the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market, our community-sponsored event with a lot of different vendors, and that's going to be starting a week from today. So welcome to the Journal, Millie.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
There. Yeah. Tell us how you got involved. We know that Joan Reed has been the manager for the last several years. What's your connection with the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce in this? Do you report directly just like Peggy Richards or the Ms. Lovejoy? Or how does the organization work out? Just
wondering. Well, I actually started as a volunteer. And my son and I were doing everything from killing mice in the building when they first moved in to just organizing paperwork in the Welcome Center, that sort of thing. And Joan absolutely built a fabulous market, and we plan to carry that on. My son was working for her as a volunteer, setting up in the morning and taking down in the afternoon, doing the heavy lifting. Good stuff for a teenager to do.
Oh, yeah.
And my job basically was to get up uber early and drive him there and question, why can't you ride your bike 3 miles on a cold spring morning, Dan? I don't know. And we helped out once in a while, that sort of thing, got to know the vendors. So when the change was made and Joan decided to move on to bigger and more wonderful pastures, I was asked to step up since I had a little meager knowledge of a market.
Mm-hmm. And prior involvement.
That's right.
So who do you report to?
We report to the chamber,
okay.
Basically a part-time chamber employee.
Right.
Ms. Lovejoy, the new president, will be coming in this week. I look forward to meeting her. I've only seen her on paper. On paper, she looks great. I'm sure in human form, she's probably great, too.
Yep.
Peggy and Renee and Wendy have all been really supportive and wear their little market shirts on the Fridays. And we're very much looking forward to the season starting.
I see you have your Dearborn Farmers and Artisans market shirt on.
I'm ready.
Are those available for sale to the general public?
They are not, but we could probably do that if we had to.
Just wondering.
If we had to.
Yeah.
we'll let you know on that, you know.
Well, this is a great service to the community, especially for people who are looking for more fresh food and vegetables and supporting local farms and vendors, artists, and so on. This is sometimes not easy to do. It's not quite as many people that can afford, small businesses that can afford to keep going in these days and times. And this is a chance for them to get, I think, special attention. They say location is everything. When you're part of a farmer's market, artisan's market like this, of course, people will be walking by. And so I think that's all very good. So your background, though, before you got roped into, before you volunteered this important
position. My background
is
varied and colorful. I'll tell you the legal parts. Oh. Actually, I'm a retired law enforcement officer who did some stand-up comedy in her day and was only retired for a short time and got into real estate out in Arizona.
And they say police officers don't have a sense of humor.
Oh, please, bring on the donuts. We'll work for donuts.
I see. Okay, very good.
When my husband came home and announced that he had taken a transfer to Detroit, keep in mind we were living in southeast Arizona, I said, wow, you're going to have to get a really gas-efficient car because I'm not going anywhere. But here we are, and we love it now. I've discovered the joy of gardening myself here in Michigan, and the folks that we have at the market are phenomenal. They're the vendors will teach you anything you want to learn about the gardening. They really are interested in sharing their knowledge and sharing the information. It's great to have kids come into the market. We do field trips. I believe we've got a fourth grade field trip coming for the first day of the market.
Oh, my
It'll
goodness.
It'll be fun. The kids will come learn.
And of course, WHFR is going to be there that same day. We survived last year during a field trip. The kids were on some sort of scavenger hunt that their teachers had devised in order to make them interact with the vendors. They said, ask for who has this thing.
I remember.
The banana. Yeah. They were looking for the banana, probably.
We got a lot of banana questions.
We did.
Yes.
But not necessarily from the kids. No, but...
Well, and it makes sense to have the kids look for the banana. I believe Joan and her husband, John, started that tradition. All the kids come to the market, and they know if they find the banana hidden in one of the vendor booths and they bring it to the market tent, they get a prize. And it's the best vegetable or fruit to have them look for because it's not grown naturally here and nobody's selling them. So that one banana is your prize winner.
This is just a crazy connection, but I saw in the media a T-shirt that somebody was wearing, and for no particular reason, but it said in bold letters, "You can always count on the banana shop." And I don't know if that's a sexual double entendre or what, but by golly. I know we had a lot of fun. We're looking forward to that. We will be out there. Of course, it's a new time, folks. Same place, the Bryant Library parking lot, also known as the lot just north of Buddy's Pizza. And about half of that lot will be vendors or whatever is needed, and then there will be parking there. And it's from 9 a.m. now until 3 p.m. Explain the change in time. Before it was, 7 to 1?
Before it was 8 to 1.
8 to 1.
The vendors needed to get there by 7, 7:30 to 7. Up. And some of these folks are driving from as far north as Bad Axe or further, and that means getting up at the bum crack of dawn with your vegetables and load up the night before. It's a lot of work. We also noticed there wasn't a lot of customers. There weren't a lot of customers
at those hours.
Between 8 and 9.
Right,
things really geared up at 9.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a survey that went out to vendors and to our customers and our newsletter subscribers and said, what do you think? And most of them said, start a little later, but please go later. They'd come for lunch. They'd get a late lunch, there wouldn't be anything left, or people were closing up. So that explains the 3 o'clock.
That was mostly the patrons wanted
it
to go later.
Yes, and the vendors seem very
happy with
the change.
The vendors didn't have a problem with it, because it's an hour later in the morning, but it's 2 hours further to stay, although they could leave any time they want to, I guess, if they had to. But
in general, we appreciate that they sign on to stay.
Right.
Now, I remember last year, not only the hours were extended to a whole different day, because I imagine it was because of the popularity and people said, I can't get there on a Friday morning or afternoon. Is that right?
So now it's Tuesdays.
It was the Tuesdays.
Once a month. That's what he's referring to.
Oh, to the evening market.
Yes.
Yes.
They do the Tuesday night once a month, June, July, and August.
Okay.
We'll do a Tuesday evening market. And that does reach out to the folks that are working during the week and can't make it.
Okay.
Also, the later afternoon, there's a few more people who will be able to make it on the Fridays.
So I was just wondering if that was already pre-planned for this year.
Yes, it is. Excellent. And that's in all our flyers. It'll be June 18th, July 16th, and August 20th.
Wonderful.
From 4 to 7 p.m. in the same location.
Okay.
And the nighttime kind of feels a little more like a party.
Yeah, does that happen to be always the second Tuesday in the month or not?
Probably does, but that would be math, sir.
Yeah, that would be easier for some people to remember rather than circling the date.
It could be.
But June 18th is the next Tuesday afternoon, early evening, from 4 to 7, that are the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market. So what else is new? Sponsor is about the same. I know Henry Ford Community College has signed on as a sponsor.
Yes.
Oakwood Hospital. And
yes.
I noticed there's some new ones that are part. I mean, it looks like about 7 or 8 names that are on your poster. Not that much? No.
No.
Okay.
Blurry vision.
Let's give credit.
Cross your eyes.
Oakwood Hospital, Henry Ford Community College. Anyone else?
And I don't have my glasses on here. Isn't that awful? I'm going to let you read that because I failed to bring them.
I have glasses.
Of course, you have the chamber and the...
Yeah. Okay.
And Henry Ford.
Right.
It's the same as it was last year in the city of Dearborn.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're very happy that this can be brought about, and it does take a lot of constant planning and tweaking, and of course, being there during the day, coordinating things. Any special events planned? For example, I always get this question: what about free parking? Sometimes
is that an event?
That would be an event.
Call in
the
city. Sure.
Yes, I would love to have free parking for the market every Friday. Mayor O'Reilly, are you there,
yes,
sir?
I know.
I really would like to do that, and I understand that it's a big thing.
Well, it's a political campaign issue, you know, that some of the candidates, and there's quite a few running for council this year since there's going to be some vacancies, definitely because some incumbents are not running again.
Right.
So there's definitely going to be some openings. You might say, well, is this going to be the same people? Well, not all the same people are running again, folks, so there's some openings, but there's going to be a big primary. I think 20-plus candidates are running for... a total of 7 positions, and it's going to be narrowed down, and then there will be 14 probably of those going on to compete for the 7 slots in November. So a lot of them are
Parking's
saying, I am for stopping paid parking in West Dearborn, and I don't know how they feel about the parking towers, but obviously that's paid too. But they give you a roof over your head,
right,
and they give you free electric car charging in the first 6 slots.
Wow.
So maybe that's worth paying a couple bucks.
Yeah,
it's only about 50. Is it 50 cents an hour?
It's not bad. And then in the evening, I think it is 50 cents an hour.
Yeah.
And then in the evening, they have a great, like a $2 flat rate that you can go if you want to go downtown and have dinner or go have a cocktail or see some shopping.
Just from the structure, though.
From the structures, right. But again,
yeah,
it's covered and mm-hmm. keeps your car dry and yeah. in the shade.
I heard, and it's probably not official, but I heard there was negotiating going on with one local business, and I won't mention them because I don't think there's been a commitment yet, the thought that they would sponsor free parking at the half of the Bryant lot that,
yes.
that wasn't...
Actually, I can mention the name.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Chef Genevieve, the wonderful owner and talented chef at Bangkok 96.
Mm-hmm. I call her Mrs. Lang, but
yes,
Vang. But
is negotiating now to sponsor some of the parking for our customers this year, which is a very generous thing to do.
It won't necessarily be in place by the next Friday.
It may not be in place by Friday,
right,
but we're working on it hard, folks. Genevieve is pretty amazing, and she's been a terrific sponsor
supporter. I talked to her since I actually eat there at all the finer restaurants of Dearborn, of course, but at Bangkok 96, she mentioned that was a possibility, and I said, well, certainly any businesses want to do it. You want to let people know in advance it's going to happen, whether it's on the journal or press releases or whatever, and see what the response is, but also have a sign at the gate or something. The gate will be up,
yes,
but I'd like to have a sign there, free parking today, thanks to whatever the business is, and
right,
if we can get other businesses to do that, I think they will get a lot of fantastic word of mouth on that. Just like I think a few of the council candidates running for this fall, we'll get
that'd
a significant
a
number
idea.
Of votes just talking about free parking, at least around the market time. We have WHFR volunteers. We're going to have our big tent set up, folks. Dennis and I will be doing the journal live out there. All this is weather permitting, of course, since we're
right,
kind of electricity dependent. And it's kind of rough doing that in the middle of a thunderstorm, but kind of risky.
That's good radio, though.
But, oh, exciting radio.
Very compelling.
Yeah, yeah, the sound of the wind and the rain pelting on the microphones and, yeah, the electrical shocks going up your spine.
It's not as fun when he says it, is it?
Streams. You got to add more streams.
I think you have to see it in person, but we won't see it in person.
No, I've scheduled sunshine.
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah. We're going to be there from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., and we'll have information about Henry Ford Community College as well.
What time?
You're coming early? Can you set up my tent? Okay, you
said 7.
No, I was thinking 9.
Yeah.
It only counts what you think.
I was thinking noon. You know.
Yeah, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., and just like the other vendors. And we'll have information there. We'll have some of our WHFR items. I think we might have a new newsletter for June, July events, but at least we've got the current newsletter to give out, our new pens. Everybody loves our WHFR logo pens because this year we get the new purple ones, Dennis. I know.
Ooh.
It's a favorite color of yours. And some people collect these at Dearborn Homecoming. We actually have people coming up to us at our tent there on the first weekend of August and saying,
What color this year? That's exactly right.
I got a complete 30-year collection. Well, okay. Can't be 30, but 28 years have been on the air. Some of these other vendors and local establishments, sometimes there's like demonstrations going on too. Like you mentioned, Mrs. Vang, I know one time she did a food preparation demonstration with a little bit of sampling. And
there will be this year. She will participate
in that.
I don't know if you've seen her do her vegetable carving. It's pretty incredible
how
fast her hands are and how talented.
Right.
But we also have Carolyn Simon coming. She's a raw food chef. She's incredible, and she's going to do a demonstration. And she'll be there for opening day.
Okay.
And we'll have music, of course. Mm-hmm. Little Jimmy Dearborn will be playing for us this year.
Jimmy Dearborn.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Do you know little Jimmy Dearborn?
Person? No, is he small or?
He's big. He's big.
That's, is that the joke, little Jimmy?
That's the joke.
He goes by little Jimmy Dearborn.
Oh, okay.
It's James Richard.
No,
you've probably seen he and Marty play in a few local venues.
Okay. Well, that is, I'm sure it's going to be great.
You'll know him when you hear him. He's played before. Terrific. And we have a lot of repeat vendors coming in and some new stuff coming as well. We had lost our candle vendor. She'd moved on. I think she moved further north and couldn't do it, so we found a new company to come out. We're looking forward to them. We have our Binky's Hot Dogs, of course, will be there. But we've also arranged with the association, the Local Food Truck Association, to have a rotating basis. We'll have a different food truck each Friday.
Oh, they'll be coming early, too. I know some Fridays, either at one location or another in West Dearborn, there's going to be the whole food truck setup.
They'll be
setup,
doing the rallies, absolutely.
The rally, as they call them. But that's
so
great.
Much
it's going
fun.
To be sort of a special appearance by one of the food trucks at each one of these events, too.
And I'm hoping for the beignet truck in the morning. It may require
what's their specialty?
Beignets. Would make sense. Have you been to New Orleans? It's like a little donut with a little powdered sugar, sometimes a little jelly on top.
Okay.
You have that with a nice cafe au lait.
Pretty toxic.
That's coffee with cream.
Fabulous.
Uh-huh.
That's right. That's good translation.
With a donut on top.
Actually, Jay's fluent in French, so I'm messing with
him. Oui, oui. See.
That means, but yes.
Yeah, well, anyway. That's going to be great. No, the food truck thing is a great thing. I visit annually at least once to Austin, Texas, and along with Los Angeles, they're really known for the whole food truck dining thing. I mean, all of a sudden, every night of the week in these vacant lots in and around Austin, Texas, it's not just one place, but five or six places, up comes 30, 40, 50 food trucks.
Seriously?
I mean, these are large lots. And they're all gourmet quality, similar to our food trucks here in this area.
It's fabulous.
Of course, they're also into breakfast burritos. So these same lots, breakfast burrito trucks pop up every morning, you know, and then they go away, and then the other ones come in. So it's
and what a difference
really
from
special.
What they used to be.
Yes.
Years
and
years ago when I worked in Miami, we had the one little guy would pull in, and you could get coffee, or you could get Cuban sandwiches, that sort of thing. We called it the Roach Coach.
Well, and the food is
nothing like today's.
The food is
gourmet.
So wonderfully fresh, and usually, like the, if it's a burger place, for example, they will have organic and or naturally grown grass fed beef, and so it's just a delight which a regular restaurant maybe couldn't even afford to do some of these things that the food trucks can do. And so it's great to see that. I see in your list here, this handout about the Farmers and Artisans Market for this year, in May, theoretically, you can look especially for asparagus, cucumbers, herbs, peas, potatoes, rhubarb, and I guess strawberries are just getting started.
Starting, yeah.
Of course, it's the end of the month. But
depending on weather, right. Some of the guys are saying now that their produce is running a little bit behind. So I would expect our produce and flower vendors to have a little something for us for opening day. And then as June carries forward, we'll see a much bigger increase in what's available.
Usually the first couple times there's more flowers and plantings available. And that'll be a lot of fun. So we're looking forward to being out there. This is at the Bryant Public Library in West Dearborn. If you into street numbers, 22,100 Michigan Avenue at Mason. And in the Bryant Public Library, that's also the home of the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce. And they do tours during the day. No, they probably wouldn't kick people out if people want to look around.
Not at all. Come in, and there's a welcome center in there, and we have a volunteer who works the welcome center. You come in and
we hope to talk to several of the people. In fact, Ms. Lovejoy, if she's available. And we last year, I think we grabbed
Jen.
Jen and Peggy and Renee. Anybody. We'll just put them on the air. I mean, we don't care.
We're not sure who the other people
are. No, I mean, responsible community leaders in that. Hopefully, a lot of local politicians that have started their campaigns already will start swinging by. That's always fun to meet them out there and shake hands. And, of course, it's not this weekend, which is the Memorial Weekend, folks. It's next weekend, so everybody should be in town, and you'll be running low on food, and you've got to pick up things and got to get part of the scene. So this is a very important local event. And we hope to see you out there, Millie. Any other words you want to share about it?
Just that they can find us on our website, the Dearborn Farmers Artisans Market.com, and they can also find us on Facebook. There's a couple of Facebook pages out there. The true actual Facebook page can be linked right from our website. Go there and click. Mm-hmm. This summer we're going to be doing some contests for likes and shares on the Facebook pages and having some great gifts to give out. Yeah. So we really look forward to increasing
the numbers. For anyone listening who is a newbie in Dearborn, that means you haven't been here at least 25 years, there are two establishments in West Dearborn ongoing, I mean year-round, that are kind of, in fact, some of them even have in the title, Farm Market. There is actually literally a Dearborn Farm Market, and this is not that. This is just from May through October at the Bryant Public Library parking lot, north of Michigan Avenue, near Buddy's and near the public library, of course. So that website address is Dearborn Farmers, plural, Artisans. Or and? There's no and in there?
Artisans Market.
Right. FarmersArtisansMarket.com.
Right.
Okay. Very good. We look forward to seeing you next week. And all of our listeners hopefully will be out there to talk to us. We'll be doing interviews live on the air back to the studio between 10 o'clock and 1 o'clock. And then hopefully have a few people with us live also during our journal show, which will be live from 1 to 2 so people can stare and make funny faces at us while we're trying to read the news.
We're not known for our smile.
Well, no,
not on the radio anyway.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks very much, Millie Judd, for being here with us, and good luck with the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Okay, we're going to feature now a couple of commentaries from Jim Hightower, our great populist broadcaster. Global beer giant dances the can-can. I don't make these up. It's his titles. And the second one, maybe for Memorial Day, let's join the Army. Now, there's an irony to that. So take a listen here to these commentaries from Jim Hightower, and we'll be right back with more local Dearborn and surrounding area news and opinions.
Anyone who says that America has lost its innovative edge in technology and manufacturing has not chugged a can of Bud recently. The buzz is back. Well, actually, Budweiser is no longer American. It's now a German outfit owned by InBev, the world's largest maker of suds. But picky. The brew crew overseeing the King of Beers knows what we American quaffers want in a can of beer. A new and improved can. Huh? Yes, says the Vice President of Innovation at Budweiser, we're consciously working to bring innovation to the packaging side of the beer market. He explains that you trend seekers are on the make for new things, so the corporation's container shapers have devised a bow tie can that kinks inward in the middle. How exciting is that? Plus, get ready to bust your beer gut. There are 8.5 fewer calories in the new can. How did they manage that? By magic, which is to say, trickery. The bowtie design allows the multi-billion-dollar Brew Kings to short you by putting almost an ounce less of beer per can than you got in the old standard 12-ouncer. But come on, we experienced hoisters of the brewer's art will definitely feel that loss of product, so they can't fool us into paying more for less. Well, that's where their innovative genius trumps our consumer instincts. To keep us off balance, Anheuser-Busch InBev's Bowtie can has nearly double the amount of aluminum of its regular can, making the new feel just as heavy as the old. Less beer, more metal. That's heavy innovation, my friends. Oh, one more innovative twist. In case some of you trend seekers try to compare ounces in the new six packs, you will find that the Bowtie cans only come in eight packs. This is Jim Hightower saying, if you want honest beer, try the craft brews at your local pub.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Imagine net zero. That's the wonky phrase attached to an elegant idea. Namely, converting communities to total renewable energy, complete recycling, and a culture of conservation to bring humankind's carbon footprint into a sustainable balance with a healthy Earth. Now, imagine the least likely place you'd expect this ideal to take root and even flourish. How about an Army base? In Texas, no less. Astonishingly, America's net zero future is being pioneered at Fort Bliss, a sprawling military base of 35,000 soldiers in El Paso. The post already has a 1.4 megawatt solar array and has placed rooftop solar panels on all base housing, generating 13.4 megawatts of energy. And it's in partnership with El Paso Electric to add a 200-acre 20 megawatt solar farm by 2015. It also has a plan to convert post waste into energy, is engaged in wind power, geothermal, and conservation projects, is promoting energy-efficient vehicles, and is building bicycle lanes. The Army. Who knew they cared? Bliss's rank-and-file soldiers, as well as the brass, are committed to achieving the goal of net zero by 2018, meaning the base will generate all the energy it uses and do it with renewables. Adding to the effort, the troops have planted nearly 15,000 trees and have become converts to recycling. To encourage the latter, the base commander, General Dana Pittard, has put the $1 million a year revenue from recycling into skating parks, exercise facilities, and other morale-boosting recreation projects. It's fostering a conservation culture, hoping that the soldiers will take it with them when they go on. This is Jim Hightower saying, there's hope for the Earth when even the Army begins to change.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
This is the new WHFR Journal. For Friday, May the 24th, 2013, a lot of exciting things happening here around town, and let's give you the updates now that you've listened to Jim Hightower and you're letting those thoughts percolate in your head. If you are, of course, my usual comment, if you are driving up north or anywhere, remember this time of year, a lot of people who go out driving are, number one, not familiar with the roads they're on. Maybe they haven't driven a long distance in quite a while. Maybe they haven't even driven for a while. And so be very careful of the other drivers on the road. Also, a lot of these people are late for something because they had these special get-togethers with family or friends or renting a spot for their camper or something. And so they're trying to go as fast as possible. Shame on them and not being careful. And then, of course, remember it's a weekend, unfortunately, that people associate with drinking, alcohol, and other substances that might alter your brain chemistry. And so be very careful and don't overdo it yourself, okay? Be sane, sober, and extremely happy, and come back safe next week. And so, you know, keep that in mind. I'm not trying to take the fun out of the holiday, if there is fun in a Memorial Day holiday to honor the dead and those that gave up a lot of their lives, that is a lot of their life, if they've been wounded or maimed because of their help to our military. And so that's what Memorial Day is all about. I find it a very solemn holiday. It's important to honor those that gave up their life for, you know, what our country told them was essential in the maintenance of our country. And I think it's sad that anybody has to die for any reason. Every man, no man is an island. Every man's death diminishes me, is how I feel about it. I don't care whose army they're in. They shouldn't have to die. I'm that naive, but there you go. By the way, all opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. Except Dennis, of course. He's certified by the president, Stan Johnson.
I can't even talk.
No, I don't even have your microphone on, so that's...
That's a little tricky. Ask me a question and then watch me flail.
He can say whatever he wants to, but his microphone won't pick it up.
So. I am loud. Your microphone might pick it up.
Yeah, okay. Well, so the Memorial Day parade plans, I thought if you're checking a newspaper, then last Wednesday's Press and Guide had double stories about it. Times Herald has some information, too. And for those that want to attend, it is the largest Memorial Day parade, longest, loudest, whatever, supposedly in the whole United States. But nonetheless, here's the detail. Of course, honoring all veterans who died while serving our country. I think anyone who served, too, should be honored. But anyway, the 89th, including our current people serving, but the 89th Annual Memorial Day Parade also will pay tribute to prisoners of war, former POWs, as they're called, and those of whose fate is still undetermined. The parade begins at 10 a.m. this Monday, the 27th, and travels along Michigan Avenue from Greenfield Road to Schaefer. That is, it goes east, for those that don't know where Greenfield and Schaefer are, ending at Dearborn City Hall, which is Schaefer in Michigan. A solemn ceremony will follow at noon at Dearborn's War Memorial, which is on the grounds of City Hall, the current City Hall. Might be the last year that we have, in fact, that City Hall for this event. But I'm not sure that Art Space can move in that quickly, though. So I'm not sure. We'll see.
No. Their sales contract, I mean, they're still reviewing everything.
Oh, yeah. So. No. They still haven't said they're going to buy.
Right.
They were given a contract by the city, but they haven't responded to the terms yet, even though, of course, they have a sort of a first right option to buy for... I don't know, number of months still.
Don't you typically put down money to have an option without the obligation? In other words, I'm reserving my right. Isn't it typically?
I didn't hear that they did that yet. They made a request to the city council, to the mayor's office, and city council approved that they be the preferred buyer of that property. And it's usually for a certain amount of time, but, you know, I haven't, I don't recollect if I ever read the cutoff on that preferred buyer's situation. I'm sure some candidate running for office would like to know if they put any money up front to reserve their spot, because that it does seem like maybe that should happen.
Sure.
Okay. So the parade will focus on the POW MIA, that is prisoner of war, or an MIA soldiers. And they're still prisoners of war from several wars that we think we know about. It's not just from the Middle East. Might still be some in North Vietnam or somewhere. They keep turning up. Some that were considered missing in action all of a sudden show up. To continue that tragic theme is the they don't give him, it's not Grand Marshal or anything, but the key speaker at the parade and ceremony will be a former POW, Captain Christopher Stone, and he now serves as the operations officer for the Michigan Army National Guard Recruiting and Retention Battalion in Lansing. He was one of three soldiers captured by Serbian forces near the Yugoslavian-Macedonian border in March 1999 during the Kosovo War. Remember the Kosovo War?
Vaguely.
Mm. They were held as POWs for 32 days before their release and return to America. And so he has a distinguished career. And also, yes, now it says there'll be fellow Grand Marshal, so he is a Grand Marshal, and Ambassador Charles Ray and U.S. Senator Carl Levin, who has announced his retirement.
So right.
Maybe one of his last parades, but that he doesn't retire until after 2014. They don't have the election until the end of next year, I think. Anyway, and let's see, what else do we know here? Ambassador Charles Ray served 30 years in the U.S. Foreign Service, including as Deputy Assistant Director of Defense for POW Missing Persons Personnel Affairs and Director at the Defense POW Missing Person Office. And also, Levin has connection that way, too. He spearheaded several POW-MIA initiatives, including authorizing the display of the POW-MIA flag at federal facilities. They got their own flag. And national cemeteries, as well as supporting the annual National POW-MIA Day of Recognition, which they don't say when that is. But there is such a day every year. So, again, some things I wish could be recognized every day of the year. Dennis mentioned Valentine's Day earlier. Mothers, fathers, everybody deserves it. Every day should be Christmas in a way. Of course, that means we'd all have day off. Nobody has to work ever if we have Christmas every day of the year. But still, some things are so good, like remembering those who have died in battle, serving our country, or at least serving the leaders of our country, that is important. That is something very important. So I just think it would be wrong, and it's my limited opinion here, my subjective personal opinion only, to not see the day as a solemn Memorial Day and to somehow take it as a recommendation, a glorification of war for its own sake. You know, that's just wrong, wrong, wrong. People dying is just so wrong, and I'm talking about ethically, morally, religiously wrong, even though, yes, it's a natural sort of thing eventually, that shouldn't happen. I will mention, and it's my personal criticism of the Henry Ford, every year it's a very popular event, gets a lot of people to go out to the Greenfield Village part of the Henry Ford here in Dearborn. They have a weekend in which they reenact Civil War musters, battles, demonstrating the firing of the old-time rifles, the muskets, and whatever they had, and a lot of people dress up in Civil War battle gear, uniforms, both North and South, and as we were talking earlier today, I think it's still the war that has killed more U.S. citizens than any other war we've ever been in as a country. Amazing with all the high technology and killing possible. Of course, we've killed a lot more people than we've ever, had killed in our battles. But in this case, both sides counted as deaths in a civil war, you know, North and South. They're both adding up at the same time. And brutal, ugly, awful, terrible thing, especially when a country is fighting itself. And there's many examples going on in the world, Syria right now primarily. It just shouldn't happen that way when really brother killing brother, sister, sister, mother, mother, so on. It's so terrible, so unfortunate. But a lot of people, I only see them cheering and happy at these Civil War reenactments, and I never know if they're cheering the Southern soldiers or the Northern soldiers or just the glory of fighting and dying in battle. I don't see a glory there. I know in ancient Athens, in old time Athens, the golden age of Greece, to die in battle was the most honorable thing you could do. In fact, that's why they had so many wars and battles, because you didn't want to die at home in your bed. You wanted to make sure that people remembered you positively because you died in this battle or that battle. That's just so wrong, I believe, to be remembered that way. The peacekeepers, the pacifists, the people that end wars and try to prevent future wars. They're the ones that should be our heroes.
Gandhi.
Yeah, sure.
The best example I can ever think of.
He did. Well, Martin Luther King Jr. And at the end of his civil rights career, if you will, he shifted to trying to get us out of Vietnam.
Yeah.
And he said, look, this, you know, dying in battle is immediate violation of your civil rights as a human being on this planet. And he made that speech in Detroit first and then elsewhere, and then somebody shot him. But it's still an important issue. So very important weekend to remember those fallen in service to our country, but also just a little admonition from yours truly. Don't think there's anything good about war. Okay, there's nothing good about war, even if you win it.
And there's so many people that look at this as the unofficial beginning of summer, too. Not much more time for kids to be in school, synonymous with backyard barbecues and the festivities. So, no, there's a lot to enjoy about the weekend, but you're right. It's people, so many people look at it in a somber way.
Just to know that we're not covering up anything here, I'm going to briefly summarize the continuing saga of money woes at Henry Ford Community College. And there was a Board of Ed meeting this last week, Monday. And so on Wednesday's press and guide of this week, on the 22nd, Katie Hetrick gave us a detailed story, which is actually very nicely detailed. She reports clearly and very completely, and they actually let her stories be published pretty much, I would think, all the way through. You know, a lot of times editors have to make tough calls, right, Dennis?
Absolutely. We always edit for length and clarity.
That's right. But in this case, she's being clear all the way through. Well, it turns out that this year's expected expenditures are $84.5 million. That's the budget, which is I think more than the city of Dearborn. I don't know. The city of Dearborn budget, what is that? It's going to be approved next week, but I thought it was only $30 million, but no?
No, I think you're right. No, remember Mustonen, Mr. David Mustonen told us that the city's is actually less than
the Dearborn,
than
the
schools. K-12. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. I think it was about $30 million.
Right. Well, this says our expected, and I didn't underline this, so that's why it's just standing out of my head. The expected expenditures this year are $84.5 million. Well, we've already cut $6.5 million from next year's proposed budget, even after covering $10 million of the expected shortfall. Without any further changes, though, they've just discovered, according to the statement from our controller at the board meeting, we can expect $16.6 million deficit for next year. So that's about another $10 million added, as we just said, to that shortfall. It's higher than expected after spring semester enrollment here dropped by 25%. Not many students here anyway, but, you know, they increased the tuition just a little bit. Still lowest in town or anywhere for higher ed academic credit, but they increased it a little bit for spring and for summer and for fall semesters here. And that's been out there a while. People should know about it. But we had a little drop of enrollment. Again, they say 25%, but it's not that many people because not that many usually attend in the spring anyway. Nonetheless, they didn't make quite as much money from that on tuition as they said. So they're going to have to find other cuts. And the story continues on 12A, and this is where it gets interesting. It's just, I don't know, it's about two or three columns spread around the edges. But a final report on the problem, and the big problem for us on campus here as faculty administrators, is we were told by Dr. Mee, our former president, last December in an email, that all rumors about any deficit were just wrong. There's no such thing. We had great economic stability. That was just last December. And then slowly every month it seems to go $3 million more deficit is being discovered somehow, somewhere. And there's some excuses, but it doesn't add up to me, nor a lot of people here at Henry Ford Community College, faculty, staff, and students. And so all of us would like to get to the bottom of it. The Board of Trustees has hired, as I mentioned last week, a private auditor to audit the books here. And then they hired a second auditor to audit the first auditor. So not a great level of confidence there in the first auditor, but, you know, that they've got to go beyond even the books that we've been keeping here. And it's another difficult time for finances here because Marge Swan has decided to retire, and she's I've worked with her many, many years here, and she's been a great head of the business office. That's what a controller is, and we've never had these kinds of budget problems before. She might have some secret stories she could share with us about this, but basically people are saying it's a variety of little problems, including inflation, you know, but you can't blame it on the teachers because, contracts have been held steady or like our teachers, I think our college teachers took a 10% cut and are now paying 20% of their benefits. That was a couple years ago. So, you know, nobody's getting major salary increases here. And so we don't know. That's the best we can say is we don't know.
We do know that they initially blamed a lot of the deficit on the fact that there were students scamming for Pell Grants. And the school was caught holding the bag. Basically, the students would come in, get the grant, not go to school, and the money had to be paid back to the federal government, and that came out of the school's pocket. But this is quite a bit more than what they originally said. I think that that was to the tune of $3 or $4 million.
It's not student scams here. It doesn't explain $16.6 million of deficit. So we're going to find out about that. It looks like the trustees did approve. They've created a line of credit to help the college pay bills over the summer, since we're in deficit right now.
Right.
That happens in a lot of districts, by the way. I think Dearborn Public Schools did it or are going to do it again. Between one budget year and the next, you have to borrow a little more money to make it through. And then when the next year starts, you pay that off quick. So it's not a matter of much interest. But, of course, you don't have that money for the next year. But that's just the way that goes. I remember working as a teacher here for many years full-time. If you didn't do the part-time work during the summer, you didn't have any income for 2 months.
Right.
And they didn't have a payment plan to, as they do for many teachers, spreading out the amounts over 12 months,
sure,
even though your contract is only, as you have your working 10, but you just get a reduced amount of money every month for 10 months, and then the board pays you for those other 2 months. So they didn't even have that for me because I started so long ago. And so I was always, you know, running up the credit cards over July and August until I could get back, because no money coming in, no money.
Right.
Okay. I guess I could have, got hired at a car wash or I don't know somewhere, but
car wash.
I don't know.
Tutoring. I can see you tutoring.
Oh yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Anyway, not a much need for telecommunication tutors during the summer, though. That's a problem. But anyway, so the report, that's the report. We're upfront about it. And some people I noticed at DearbornPatch.com that were commenting on this, you know, blog-type comments, said, it's good that we're investigating, and we never had this problem ever before, and we'll get the answers. Even the new president of the college, Dr. Stan Jensen, he said, during times of change, it's important to remember what will not change. And he said, we're going to stay focused on our students and student success. And whatever cuts hopefully won't hurt that effort. Some programs, in fact, may need to be expanded. And so he's got some ideas. And he did joke that can't blame him for the situation we're in right now. He says, I like to volunteer. It's not my fault, he quipped. Of course, he said that's the last time that he'd be able to say that at the last board meeting, because now he is in charge.
He's on the clock.
There's another $3 million debt that pops up next month. It's kind of the buck will stop at his office. So we look forward to talking to him sometime on the show, of course. So that's the money woes. We'll balance the budget somehow. Of course, the state contribution has dropped from over 60% of the budget from Freeport Community College to only 30%. So most of the money, and therefore the only certain way to raise money for Henry Ford Community College, the millage participation by the residents is only 17%. So the rest has to come from student tuition. I mean, we just don't have any other choice on that. Just no other way to go. So there's a possibility that our tuition will have to raise again a little bit for next winter semester, starting next January. Okay, well, We have about 12 minutes until Highway 61, the Best in the Blues, is going to begin here at WHFR at 2 o'clock until 6 o'clock. Let's look down my list here. Boy, I've got a number of things. Some will take a little bit of time, but okay. All right, let me jump to this one. Dennis hasn't heard this before.
Okay.
But
I read your list when you're not looking.
What do you think of pond scum?
What do I think of pond?
Yeah, personally, yes. Has anybody ever said you were lower than?
No. Okay. But I have heard people.
That is a phrase.
It is.
Yeah. And I guess pond scum is on the top of the pond.
Sure.
And so if you're lower than that, you're
in the water.
Lower than scum. Okay. And that's a metaphor, of course. Well, it turns out that the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory, also known as the PNNL, which is a branch of our federal government.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they are. PNNL.gov. Yep. You can go there. Just this week, they released a press release. It was in the New York Times and Science News also. They have clearly discovered that pond scum can be used for fuel.
Okay.
End of story. Dennis doesn't believe it. Okay.
Well, I believe anything you tell me. Maybe
sure.
That's what gets me in trouble.
We definitely got to mention that, too, before the end. But so where's the pond scum issue? Here it is. Okay. A new analysis shows that the nation's land and water resources could likely support the growth of enough algae, or is it algae? Anyway, A-L-G-A-E, to produce up to 25 billion gallons of algae-based fuel a year in the United States, which is 1/12 of our country's yearly needs. But that's just natural. It just keeps scum keeps happening, right?
It's
just
it sure does.
One of those things. But it has to be a certain kind of climate, and you have to have specially built shallow ponds, and so you'd need to create these, of course. But the atmosphere is best where it's hot, humid, and wet, and especially promising are the Gulf Coast, that is, you know.
New Orleans would be great.
New Orleans, Mississippi, Alabama, and the southeastern seaboard.
Mm-hmm.
And they say the Gulf Coast offers a good combination of warm temperatures, low evaporation, which means it stays humid all the time, access to an abundance of water, and plenty of fuel processing facilities. So algae is plump with oil. And several research teams and companies are pursuing ways to improve the creation of biofuels based on algae. You know, like we've had these ethanol, E85 fuels, and where do they come from? Corn. Well, that's one of the most stupid ideas that anybody ever had. Oh, we'll just use corn to make fuel for our cars. And within 6 months of just little trial experiments in making E85, we got a shortage of corn, which is food that we need to eat. And so that was just wrong. Imagine, I mean, we'd taken like all the corn in America, and then still it wouldn't be able to be processed in enough fuel for cars that would eventually maybe run on that. So it's just wrong. But growing algae composed of more oil is certainly possible. It creates algae that live longer and thrive in cooler temperatures also. And we're close to that. And so sunlight and water, of course, antagonists, they say, well, sometimes there's clouds or a shortage of water. It will take some water, apparently, from our water supply to make sure that these pools have enough effort. But it won't take that much cost or effort. And again, 1/12 of our annual need for fuel, 25 billion gallons of algae oil, could be produced annually quite easily. Again, their upfront cost to create the ponds, an increase of 4 billion gallons over the previous study's estimate. The new amount is enough to fill the nation's current oil needs for 1 month, that is 1/12 of the year. I think we can figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
And every year, you know. So why not do it? Why not do it right away? I mean, it's a done deal, folks. Yes, they probably will improve the technology further for this, but seems like a great way to go. Because some people think, well, just wind power and solar won't be enough, and the cost to set that up I bet it's a lot more expensive than building a shallow pool and letting algae do their thing.
I would think so.
You know, let that pond scum do its thing. So that, you know, I don't know if people follow science, but these are things that like maybe our politicians ought to know about this? Ought somebody write up a bill to give some support for pond scum creation for making algae gasoline? And, you know, if cars can run on corn, they can run on algae gasoline. We already know they can run on methane. They can run on propane.
On water.
Internal
right?
combustion engines. Well, that's a question. But
there's people out there trying it, I know.
Some people believe there's such a thing as an engine that can run on water. Not steam. Just different. Water as a fuel somehow. Yeah. Not sure about that one. But that was there's some great science fiction and conspiracy theories about how the oil industry has covered that one up. And they'd love to cover this up, too, because this would cut into their profits. If they have 1/12 of the year, you don't need their fuel, you know, the oil from the ground. Now, if you read something else today, it seems that our shale oil issues, if we start digging into shale, and that's a problem, folks. I mean, yeah, Canada's doing it, and boy, it's a problem for them. But we might be the biggest oil-producing country, along with Canada, in the whole world by 2030. And that you said, well, it's amazing. Why? Because the oil reserves are depleting elsewhere in the world.
Right.
They're running out of oil elsewhere. The Middle East won't have much oil left, and whatever oil they've got are going to sell for a high price. So we need to switch over now, but not necessarily to shale oil. The other story I found here was in the New York Times. Next is the Detroit River, and I think Levin or somebody has just, Representative Conyers from this area has set up a bill. He sent a letter to the Attorney General to look into the legality of this company that has dumped all this, I call it slag, but I think that's a technical term, all this residue of shale oil next to the Detroit River, and it's building up. There was a picture there. Where the heck is the... A picture of this from the Times.
They can't see it anyway, Jay.
Oh, I know they can't see it. Well, it turns out that the company is doing this. It turns out there is this residue from shale oil that when it gets processed at a plant, and there are plants in the southeast Detroit that do this, and they have to put this byproduct somewhere. Now, I understand the byproduct can be moved and used for something eventually, but this is all kind of toxic residue, and it's piling up huge. You can see it from Canada, from Windsor. Mm-hmm. It's all right next to the Detroit River. It's huge area, and apparently it's land owned by this company. The company is owned by the Koch or the Koch brothers? KOCH.
Right.
They're infamous for supporting, conservative political causes. They want to buy the LA Times right now and turn into a political rag in their direction. They have also done a number of business practices that are pretty scandalous over the years. There's two of them, okay? And it's either Koch or Coke or whatever. And this does have to do with this slag or residue of shale oil. And who's responsible for this? And what if it sort of just falls into the Detroit River? In the picture, I didn't see a fence or anything, or a barrier.
Huh.
It's just piling up, and it looks like it's about 20, 30, 40 feet high, and it's quite a distance.
Huh.
And, of course, people from Windsor didn't buy their riverfront property to look at a pile of this residue. But the question is, what's going to happen to it? It will just stay there forever? Apparently, it is private property, but it's right next to the river, which means it might contaminate our drinking water. So good for John Conyers. And I think it was because of the story in the New York Times.
Right.
Was it covered first in Detroit? I don't know. I don't get the Detroit papers because I don't find them very informative most of the time. Sorry. But I know the Detroit Free Press is trying a whole new thing, a new editorial policy, and we'll see what happens there. But at this point, the story is out there, and that's just bad news. So the shale oil, if you saw that story, doesn't mean things are going to be answered easily. The big story from last Friday that you heard about in all the news is, of course...
Well, the International Festival, and we've been ongoing discussions. I'm not going to say for the last year, but we talk about it regularly because there were so many things. There were things in the courts, of course, with the lawsuits and people being arrested and pigs' heads on big sticks and things like that. And we know that an unnamed pastor from somewhere south was planning a visit. But the bottom line is that earlier in the year, the city of Dearborn asked the Arab American Chamber of Commerce if they could, in fact, move the festival, which for the previous 18 years had been on Warren Avenue in the heart of East Dearborn, if they could move it to ultimately selected Ford Woods, which is what Ford and Greenfield,
right.
A big park there. And they wanted it because it's enclosed by a fence. It could be people could be charged to come in. Remember, this was a free event in the heart of East Dearborn. And this way it could be a little bit more structured. Well, it's hard for me to tell based on this the story on Patch.com. It doesn't seem like the promoters, the Area Chamber of Commerce, is mad, but they do want a year to kind of get things together because they're not prepared. They weren't prepared for this move.
Well, of course, you're trying to keep positive publicity there. Again, this is the American Arab. It's not Arab American. The American Arab Chamber of Commerce. It's not the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce. And they have canceled the 2013 Arab International Festival, and they renamed it Arab International Festival. It used to be, I think, Arab American Festival for years, but because they did have visitors from around the world coming here, tourists coming in. And Faye Badoun, who is the head of the American Arab Chamber of Commerce.
It's the Arab American. It is. According to the press release, right even at the top
well,
there.
Well, the other the other story says it other way around.
Okay, regardless. But it is more or less consisting of mostly Arabs. I mean, that was the whole point of it.
The press and guide says American Arab.
Got it. Okay, yeah. Regardless, Patch calls it something else.
Right. The point that Faye made was, and the excuse was, or the rationale, and she pointed out, look, it's supposed to be promoting business on West Warren. So those business, that's the main reason it got started. Yes, there's carnivals and there's some cultural sharings of ideas and so on, but basically it's a carnival, it's a festival, and it's to help promote the businesses. It's not called a chamber of commerce for nothing, folks.
Right.
It's the businesses on West Warren, and they have their own chamber of commerce, the American Arab Chamber of Commerce, according to the press and guide anyway. And you know, as I said, for the last several years, the mayor said, well, why don't you go to Dearborn Ford Field in West Dearborn? Why don't you go to some other location? And now it was pretty much the city was going to sort of push the issue, and they were going to go to Ford Woods, which is on the east side of town, at least.
Sure.
You know, because it's sort of a gated area. Everybody would have to pay admission to get into Ford Woods. And that was an interesting plan. I thought it would work. But certainly, these businesses, this only changed in the last, 4 months ago, we heard about the Ford Woods location.
Yeah.
And the businesses, if they wanted to promote their business down on Ford, on West Warren, they would have to plan to buy, I don't know, stoves and a tent and things like that to put at the festival. So I can imagine the logistics needed if they wanted to promote their business in Ford Woods. They'd have to buy a whole bunch of stuff and put out some money, so Faye Badoun didn't state it that way, but that if they have another year to plan, then maybe they can have that great presence, even if it is at Ford Woods.
Well, but it's really interesting, she did say they need an extra year, and I did read that they call it a hiatus, but in the headline it says, organizers cancel 2013 Arab International Festival. The Arab American Chamber of Commerce says it will reevaluate the future of the 18-year-old event. So they, according to that, when you think, well, maybe it's still up in the air, and they may not have another one.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. Well, the businesses on West Warren are not huge named national, international businesses. So how much money do they have?